Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. A little bit later on the show, we're going to talk with Peter Hamby of Snapchat and Puck about a whole lot of issues in politics this week. But let's begin with the issue of Taiwan. Speaker Nancy Pelosi recently took a group of members of Congress to Taiwan for a very controversial, highly publicized trip. Representative Mark Takano was on that trip with her. He talks to her, to us, about some scary moments on that trip of even trying to get there, why they were there, what her message was there. Plus this legislation that was his legislation, the PACT Act, which a lot of people learned about with burn pits that Jon Stewart was talking about a lot. He says it was the highlight of his life, highlight of his career, I should say, to see that be passed. So here is our conversation this week with Congressman from Riverside, Mark Takano. Welcome back to The Issue Is, and thank you very much for joining us from your trip to Hawaii. It looks beautiful behind you.
It's beautiful here, and I'm taking a moment out before what I know is going to be a very, very vigorous next few weeks.
Yeah, it will be. But let's first talk about where you have been. Why this Taiwan trip, and why right now?
The trip to Asia was something the speaker had long planned. We planned to go back in January, and the COVID surge here in our country put a damper on that. We tried to go back in April, and the speaker got COVID. And we rescheduled for August. And of course, we had to be very fuzzy about whether we actually were going to go to Taiwan for security reasons. But this was something that an Asia trip to Asian democracies was something that we had long planned. And the future of the century for America is going to depend on our greater engagement in this region. Taiwan will not be isolated. The United States of America, the people of the United States, the Congress is united in ways that we haven't seen the Congress united in quite a while.
I mean, it really is remarkable to see so many Republicans backing Nancy Pelosi on anything. They are on this. But we also know that China is hugely powerful and very deeply invested in America's economy. And there were these reports about some dissension in the Biden administration with you doing this. Did President Biden ask you all not to go on this trip?
President Biden never told Speaker Pelosi, don't go. He never said that. There may have been others in the administration who disagreed with our going. But President Biden did not. We flew on a blue and white plane and very ably piloted, by the way. I can't get into much of the details, but the Chinese were messing with us. And I can't get into details of that, but they were doing things to interfere with our getting there. But, you know, 250,000 Taiwanese were following us. They were following the trajectory of our plane. There was some way in which they were able to do that through aeronautics and the way that they track planes.
So are you suggesting that China's military was actively doing things to your plane while it was in the air to try to stop you from landing?
Well, Alex, I can't say much more. All I can say to you is that we were very much aware that the Chinese did not want to see us go. And we asserted that we were doing very much what other congressional delegations done, what other speakers have done, other speakers of the House, that this was not a change to the status quo.
Were you scared about landing? Were you concerned for your safety?
I had a very high degree of confidence in our military and all the precautions they were taking. Nevertheless, the delegation did join in hands, and Chairman Meeks of the Foreign Affairs Committee, the Speaker, asked him to lead us in a prayer. And he prayed and said, and he framed it in terms of good trouble, that what we were doing was getting into good trouble, in the terms of John Lewis, that we are standing up for a plucky democracy, and we're not going to allow that democracy to be isolated. And we're not going to allow a new normal to be established, a new status quo. We are simply abiding by the present status quo, and we're not going to allow that to change. That's the good trouble we were getting into.
I'm sure Congressman Lewis would be proud of you for that. I want to talk about another topic now. You are the chairman of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, and you just had a big bill that was your bill that the president signed. It's called the PACT Act. Got a lot of attention. This has to do with veterans impacted by burn pits overseas, making sure that they get the health care that they deserve. We know John Stewart got involved in trying to get this thing passed through the Senate. There were some roadblocks there. You were there, front row, watching this legislation get signed, your legislation. What was that like for you to see this become law?
Enormously, enormously proud moment for me. I have to say, if I do anything equal or greater than getting something like the PACT Act signed into law, I'll feel very fortunate in terms of a legislative career. This is the biggest piece of legislation that I've been behind. But more than that, I think about the 3.5 million veterans and the victory this is for them, the anxiety they no longer have to feel about whether their families are going to be taken care of, if they should get a debilitating illness associated with these burn pits. There was so much more to this bill than the burn pits, Alex. We also declared 23 new presumptive illnesses. This is a big, big healing moment for a country that's been through 20 years of conflict, both in Afghanistan and in Iraq. And the global war on terror extends beyond that.
Highlight of your career so far?
I would say it's the highlight of my career. This is a huge moment for our country, and I believe it can bring our country together.
Let's hope so, because we need more unity in this country. Congratulations.
We do.
That is something
thank
to be
you.
Really proud of. Congressman Mark Takano, thank you so much, and enjoy Hawaii.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Congressman Takano. Now to Peter Hamby. He hosts on Snapchat, Good Luck America. He has 2.5 million subscribers for that. He also hosts a great podcast that I listen to almost every day called The Powers That Be. Puck is really geared towards the intersection of Washington and Hollywood and Silicon Valley and all the movers and shakers from that world. Peter went to Georgetown. He was a reporter at CNN for years, covered the Romney campaign, wrote some interesting sort of deep dive research papers into social media for Harvard. He's a really smart guy, and it's his first time in our studio. So here's Peter Hamby. Peter Hamby is with us for the first time. Peter has a huge following on Snapchat. More than 2.5 million people subscribe to Peter's daily political show on Snapchat. It's called Good Luck America, because God knows we need it. He also hosts a daily podcast called The Powers That Be. This is for Puck News, which he's one of the co-founders of. Puck focuses on the power players in Washington, Silicon Valley, New York, and Hollywood, how it all sort of comes together. Peter, welcome in studio. Great to have you here.
It's great to be here. I've only done this on Zoom.
Yeah, so we appreciate that. I love the podcast. I listen to it all the time. It's very smart. And this week when you were talking about Liz Cheney, you talked about the Liz Cheney MSNBC fantasy, which is a hilarious title for a podcast. Seems like there's a real disconnect between the way some people in Washington, New York, even L.A. see Liz Cheney and the way actual voters see Liz Cheney.
That's right. There's a term in Washington called strange new respect. When someone from the other team, the other party, suddenly turns around and you agree with them. And Liz Cheney embodies that. When she voted to impeach Trump, when she joined the Select Committee in the House to investigate January 6th, suddenly Democrats loved her. This is the daughter of Dick Cheney. Lifelong Republican, voted with Trump 96% of the time, and yet she became a fixation in Washington for the press, for Democrats, who, you know, all decamped to Wyoming, specifically Jackson Hole, Wyoming, to cover her primary, where the hotels and restaurants are nicer. She is definitely a story in Washington, but to your point, she lost by almost 40 points, I think like 36. She was polling, losing by 30. That should tell you that I think MAGA Trumpers are a little more quiet in the polls. I think Republicans will do a little bit better come November. But yeah, I mean, she, as you heard, talked about the party of Lincoln. She created a fundraising PAC to travel the country, keep her name in the news, maybe run for president. But look, at the end of the day, right now, she's a fixation of Democrats and maybe MSNBC and resistance people on Twitter. But she's a woman without a party. I mean, the Republican Party is fully owned by Donald Trump at this point, or his disciples, Ron DeSantis, Kerry Lake, et cetera. And Democrats, at the end of the day, wouldn't vote for her for president, even though they might send her money, as a lot of Democrats did in the primary.
So you think that the prospect of her running for president to essentially block mm-hmm. Donald Trump actually would be good for Donald Trump, and her running as a third party would be good for Donald Trump too.
I think both would be good for Donald Trump. The reality is that if Trump runs and he's sending all the signals he will, the only way he's going to lose a Republican primary is a head-to-head race against someone who runs a great campaign, a head-to-head against Ron DeSantis. But that's it, because think back to 2016, even if a bunch of people run, they all divide the vote, Donald Trump gathers a plurality, et cetera, et cetera. We know the end of that story. And then again, a third party, if she decides to run as a third party in 2024, Democrats need those people, those suburbanites, women, some suburban men in those swing states, they need them to vote for Democrats like they did for Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. If they're sitting on the fence and they're voting for a third party, they're not taking votes from Republicans, they're taking votes from Democrats. And we saw that again in 2016.
Well, let's talk about Donald Trump's strength right now, because there are at least four investigations happening at the same time that could, you know, lead to him behind bars. Uh-huh. And yet he keeps getting stronger and stronger, so much so that the people that are likely running against him now are putting out statements of support of him after this Mar-a-Lago raid. What's going on there? Talk about the disconnect between the way some people in the elite media see him and the way that a lot of voters see him.
First of all, I don't think it's fundamentally good that Donald Trump is under investigation on multiple fronts and maybe broke the law. Like, I don't think that helps his chances winning a general election the next time around. But in a Republican primary, you know, he's like a superhero where you attack him and it makes him stronger. He needs something to run against. Like, he defines the term negative partisanship in American politics. They're out to get me. They're out to get you. The deep state is investigating me. And because, remember, he's deplatformed, he's not on Twitter or Facebook, all these platforms anymore, he needs some kind of oxygen to get the mainstream media to talk about him. And this investigation is a perfect example of that. And to your point, I mean, even Mike Pence, who's turned on Donald Trump, is now coming out and defending him against this FBI investigation.
Well, and meanwhile, Joe Biden is kind of the opposite, right? He likes to be kumbaya, let's all get together, bipartisan. He's uncomfortable running against somebody else. He's had all these legislative wins. I mean, significant legislation. Mm-hmm. There is an argument that he's been one of the most effective presidents legislatively, at least since LBJ. Mm-hmm. And yet, it's not really helping him in the polls. A little bit of an uptick mm-hmm. in the polls, but we have some new numbers that just came out at the end of this week here in California. This is the Berkeley IGS poll. We want to put this up on the screen. Should Biden run in 2024? 61% of Californians say no. 31% say yes. Among Democrats, it's 46-46. And then to the question of who should replace him? Let's get to that in a second. First, let's talk about why do you think that Biden is not getting more credit, not getting people more excited based off of what he's doing?
There's so many factors, and it's still kind of a mystery. One, he said, I was elected to just get rid of Donald Trump. That was the bargain. I don't think people thought much more deeply about what they wanted him to do. So there's that. Two, his weakest spot in the polls right now among Democrats is young people. They were never in love with him, enamored with him in the first place. They didn't think he would or has taken progressive enough steps on a variety of issues, and not just student loans, the economy, healthcare, climate, even though he has. So that gets to the third problem, which is communication. The big bill he just passed, the Inflation Reduction Act, has more money invested in climate and greening the U.S. economy than any bill that's ever been passed. He's done more for climate with the infrastructure bill, the IRA, and the American Rescue Plan than any president ever, and invested more money in climate fighting climate change than any government in the entire world. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people just don't know that. And part of this is that a lot of the bills he's been passing are long tail bills. People won't see the effects of these for a long time to come. Whereas with inflation, grocery prices, mm-hmm. gas prices, people see that every day.
Every day.
And they're like, who do I blame? I don't know, the guy in office. And so it's just a tough thing. He's not the world's greatest communicator. On top of the fact, he's passed these very big, complicated bills. And so getting that through to the kind of low information voter that Democrats need to show up and the passionate Democratic base, it's tough. It's tough for him. On top of the fact that Trump currently is driving so much news. I was listening to MSNBC on the way over here in the car. They're talking about Trump. They're not talking about Biden.
Right. Well, it seems like MSNBC likes to do that.
they do.
But to that point, though, Joe Biden doesn't give almost any TV interviews. He is not somebody who's a big user of social media himself. Mm-hmm. And he's not taking advantage of a lot of different ways that he could communicate. But there are other people who are. And let's get to this question from that Berkeley poll. This is really interesting. Mm-hmm. Because all these people think that Biden shouldn't run. So who should run for president? Among California Democrats, Gavin Newsom, number one, at 13%. Tied with Bernie Sanders at 13%. Kamala Harris in third place, the Vice President of the United States at 10. What's your reading on that?
I'm fascinated by this. Also, the Vice President's not going to like the fact that Mayor Pete was slightly above her in that poll, I believe. Yeah. My read there is Newsom, and you know him better than I do, but he's made this sort of gamble that we live in a very combative, partisan, polarized atmosphere. And unlike President Biden, who wants to make a phone call to Mitch McConnell and who wants to pass some bipartisan legislation, Newsom is running ads in Florida. He's throwing punches at Republicans. And the base really seems to like that. And Newsom is also pretty good. I wouldn't say he's the, like, smoothest dude in the world. He can be a little stiff. But he gets social media. Like, he's dropping video clips all over TikTok and YouTube. And you don't see that from President Biden very much. Again, because those formats are not his place. He likes to read David Brooks columns and right. Watch NBC Nightly News.
Well, and the advantage, of course, for Gavin Newsom is he's got Democratic supermajorities, yes. So he can do whatever he wants,
right.
Whereas Joe Biden's got a 50-50 Senate and could soon be losing the House. That gets to the sort of the question about the midterms. And one of the things we're not going to see in the midterms this year is George Gascon on the ballot. There were some questions about whether the LA County DA was going to face a recall. It came this close to happening, not going to happen. I talked to George Gascon this week on Fox 11 with my colleague Marla Tejas. Here's some of what he said. Do you see this as a vindication? Or do you see this as, okay, it's time to change some of the policies?
I'm not sure that it's a vindication. Look, I think a sign of good leadership, in fact, I think a sign of being a good person is to continue to evolve and to learn and to adjust.
So that's what he said there. I think one of the most interesting questions going forward for the midterms here in California is, what issue is going to be top of mind? Is it going to be crime and homelessness, which would potentially advantageous to, like, Rick Caruso running for mayor of Los Angeles or Sheriff Alex Villanueva? Mm-hmm. Or is it some of these national issues that Democrats are excited about? Mm-hmm. Roe v. Wade, Donald Trump, and does it become more of a national election? How do you see things?
I mean, I think at the end of the day, every election depends on the economy first and foremost. And by the economy, I don't mean home sales or the unemployment rate. It's just how people feel about it. And gas prices, again, being a good example, inflation. But I find it really interesting, too, and I don't have a clean answer for this. I mean, before the mayoral primary, I thought Rick Caruso would actually do better than he did against Karen Bass. And part of that is I live in Venice, so I see a lot of the homelessness and crime issues that were being discussed in TV ads, et cetera, et cetera. And my precinct in Venice, I looked at the results, and I'm sort of, like, for people who know Venice, kind of live near that Gold's Gym. That's my precinct, like, off of Rose Avenue. Caruso, I thought, would do much better there because you have a lot of new homeowners and people who want to do more to, like, combat homelessness. But he lost by, like, 30 points in my precinct. At the same time, that's the City Council District 11, the campaign between basically Aaron Darling and Tracy Park, two opposite sides of the homelessness issue, very combative. That was about 50-50 in my precinct. So there's, like, a big difference. So there's all these mixed messages we're getting. Yes, New York elected a former cop to be tough on crime to be mayor, Democratic city. Seattle, they elected a Republican city attorney for the first time in, I think, 30 years against a defund the police candidate. And then, of course, the DA recall in San Francisco with Chase Abunet, and he got recalled. And then Gascon didn't qualify. It's just, there's all these mixed messages. I think it'll be, at the end of the day, the economy just kind of always is. Is there enough jingle jangle in people's pocketbooks? You know? And I think that's defines elections.
By the way, on the weekends, you can see Peter pumping iron with Arnold Schwarzenegger at the Gold's Gym over there.
I did bump into Martin O'Malley there one time. He loves the Gold's Gym every time he's in L.A.
Not quite as cool.
Not as cool.
All right, Peter, we want to talk for a moment about you. Here's some of that.
I say that as somebody who used to be the young, shiny, cool guy, but now is the gray-haired old grizzled vet.
Yeah, the gray is pretty rad.
That is Peter Hamby talking to former President Barack Obama on his Snapchat show, Good Luck America. Peter's show has 2.5 million subscribers. He's long been ahead of the game when it comes to media and politics. Peter is still with us here. Peter, what do you think is sort of the way to communicate to people now, especially young people? What's the sort of best advice you can give to people to better get a message out?
Man, I would love to give advice to journalists. I don't necessarily want to right now. For journalists, I think it's incumbent just to be yourself and authentic. Be smart, serious, authoritative, do all the rigorous work of journalism. Like, I do a show on Snapchat, but I'm not showing up like that Steve Buscemi skateboard meme and saying, how do you do, fellow kids? Yeah. I'm just doing interviews, and I think the audience respects it. For politicians, this is really interesting. Obama's a great example of this. I talked to Obama's chief digital officer when he was in the White House. Obama started putting out these Spotify playlists every year. He loves Spotify, he loves music. He wrote them all himself. And most of the stuff he did on digital, he's comfortable with it. He has young daughters who use these different platforms. I've also worked with Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden, and it's just like they're not as comfortable in these spaces. And so for politicians, the number one thing, just have a message. Whether you're a candidate, know why you're running. If you're governing, like, be clear and concise about what you're doing while governing. And then take that message in whatever way you can to the different platforms, but don't, like, betray yourself and try to be cool just because you're doing a show on Snapchat or, you know, try to have some different voice on Twitter. Like, Joe Biden doesn't write his own tweets, and that's fine. But he does need to find a way to get his surrogates to do that kind of thing for him on the platform.
What do you think the biggest mistake that people are making in that space?
I think it's just that. It's not being themselves, being authentic. You know, you see this with TikTok. Newsom's actually, like, okay on TikTok because he's not trying to be the cool kid. I was looking at Beto O'Rourke in Texas, his TikTok feed. He's not doing a ton of, like, straight-to-camera, like, here's why you should go vote for me. His bit is, like, they're taking clips from his rallies and his events and, like, hoping they go viral. And they're interviewing his young supporters and letting those people speak for themselves. In Georgia, John Ossoff, he loved doing the TikToks, doing the memes. The guy, Tim Ryan, running for Senate in Ohio, he does it. The Democrat running for governor in South Carolina, Joe Cunningham, he's all in on doing TikTok trends and memes. But, like, Joe Biden couldn't do that. Mitch McConnell couldn't do that.
Well, I hope that Mitch McConnell would do it because I think that would be hilarious. Where do you think all of that is going? What's next in that space?
Oh, that's tough. The number one thing, and this scares me a little bit because I think you and I are similar in this way. It's like the younger generations increasingly, and lots of surveys show this, trust people over brands. In other words, like, I follow Peter Alex on Twitter, but I don't really care that much about Fox LA. I'm not saying that's good or bad, but, like, journalists have to thread the needle between doing both, and I think that can be difficult. There's a lot of first-person creators out there on the internet who are peddling disinformation and junk and masquerading as journalists. And, you know, actual journalists have to figure out the balance between, I work for CNN, but I also have a following on Snap, TikTok, Instagram, or whatever. And I think the younger generation is more looking toward the latter.
All right, you ready to have some fun?
This wasn't fun?
I mean, this is all fun, but we're going to take it to the next level. We play a game on this show called Personal Issues.
Okay.
This is our chance to get to know you a little bit better. We're talking with Peter Hamby of Snapchat and Puck News. We put 30 seconds up on the clock. We get your favorites. First thing that comes to mind, don't linger on anything too long. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay, favorite TV show?
We're rewatching Broad City right now, and it's living up to all
favorite book.
Oh, this, you're gonna like this. The Powers That Be by David Halberstam. That's the name of my podcast. It's a history of basically media in the 50s and 60s and the titans of media.
What is your favorite band?
Two answers: The Band, and this is a little different, but LCD Sound System.
And what's your favorite sports team?
This is Georgetown Hoyas basketball, but I grew up a Reds fan. I'm still a Cincinnati Reds fan. It's hard not to live in LA and root for the Dodgers.
And you don't say the Cincinnati Bengals?
Mixed bag. My mom's from DC. Okay. So Commanders, dad's from Cincinnati, Bengals. Mixed emotions there. It's been easier to be a Bengals fan in recent years. Exactly. Also, I'm an LSU football fan, so Joe Burrow, Bengals.
We had Liz Smith on the show recently, who worked for Pete Buttigieg, big Democratic strategist. She talked about how the Bengals are going to win the Super Bowl next year. Do you agree with that?
I hope so. I think it's incredibly hard for a team to go back to the Super Bowl. The Bengals had an inside straight to the AFC championships. It's going to be very hard. There's a target on their back now, but I hope they do.
And I'm glad that you have jumped on the Dodgers bandwagon. Are you ready? You ready for a World Series this year? They look pretty good.
A Dodgers-Yankees World Series would be pretty incredible.
That'd be pretty good for our network, too, because we have the World Series. Big ratings for that. Our thanks to Peter. Go Dodgers. Thank you for listening to The Issue Is. We'll see you next week with more. In the meantime, hope you subscribe, like us, comment, all that good stuff. Next week, we'll have Ron Brownstein. Longtime journalist, has a great book out about L.A. Of course, you see him on CNN all the time, worked for the L.A. Times for years. We're really excited to talk to him. Hope you're enjoying your summer. See you then.